Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you.
Hello, and welcome to episode 282 of Dogcast Radio, which features dog life hacks you need to know.
We don't need to be training our dogs for hours at a time. I think people think that we, you know, you need to set aside big chunks of time. But in reality, for sort of everyday training, fitting in a few minutes multiple times a day is very beneficial and more achievable for the majority of dog owners.
Before that, we're going to be positive. Oh, yes, we are. Come on, join in. It's panto season in the UK. It's something that's been very relevant for me and Diamond recently. Not panto season, but the subject of being positive. Because we've been grappling with behavioural issues with Diamond, who is a Papillon and who is now 9 months old. Yes, I know 9 month old dogs are horrible hormonal hounds, but this is something that's been going on since day one. I thought it was just puppy biting combined with lots of energy, but looking back, I can see it was more than that. So we've been battling away, pairing being handled with treats, going as slowly as we need to for Diamond's comfort. And it has been a long, slow, painful process. We're seeing progress. But there have been those who have advised us to apply a quick bit of the laying on of hands, just a touch of tough love. And I'm going to be honest, because I feel we've got to know each other well by now, I wavered. I only considered, I didn't act, but I was in desperate straits, lost on a stormy sea of tiredness and feeling that my own dog didn't like me. And when the person advising the harsh methods pointed to their own dog as a model of good behaviour, I found it hard not to wonder, was I just making life even harder for myself? Amidst all this, I saw a post by wonderful behaviourist Bethany Bell about why aversive, harsh methods are bad for dogs. It felt like a life belt had been thrown to me as I was thrown around by that stormy sea. I grasped it with both hands and reached out to Bethany.
I've got today with me somebody very positive, Bethany Bell. Hi, Bethany, from Canine Ethical Associates.
Hi there.
Hi. And we're going to be positive today, and there's a lot to pack in, I know. So I'm just going to... It was one of your posts on Facebook that really pulled me in, and I thought, I need to talk to you again, because we've talked before, and I thought, no, I'm having you back. So, and thank you for finding the time at the moment, because we're coming up to Christmas, so thank you. But it was this post.
That's okay.
Thank you. It was this post. Yes, I know that using harsh methods on dogs can work. I know it can be fast, convenient, and may even give the illusion of an obedient, well-behaved companion. I know that it's easy to be seduced by the results. A dog who sits, stays, heels, never pulls, never questions, always obeys. But I also know the cost. I know that it hurts the very soul of the being we are entrusted with. It hurts them in ways we don't always see on the outside, but that linger, settle, and hide within. It's a harm that settles into their core, silencing their joy, crushing their spirit, instilling a quiet fear they carry with them. That's
brilliant writing.
That's really moving. Thank you so much for posting that, because I know, I mean, let's say for one thing, I do know how easy it is to get seduced by that dark side and to sort of think, but I want the dog to do it now. And people are saying, you know, for example, I've been advised scruff, pick the dog up by the scruff and even lift them up and look them in the eye and say no. And you're like, does that mean anything to the dog? What we actually, but you know, but you think, but they're saying to me, their dog isn't doing this, and my dog is still doing this biting or this behaviour, whatever it is. So it's so easy to go, if it's a quick fix and it works, and the dog has stopped doing the behaviour, maybe I'll try it. But it's wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that's missed quite often is it's the ethical side of it too. And it is wrong, and we don't want to inflict that on our dogs. And I think a lot of people don't want to do that.
Yeah.
They're either unaware or they're led by fear of what might happen if they don't. And I think that lots of people also miss the correlation between doing this to their dog, and then later down the line, their dog develops behavior problems or confidence issues, or the relationship between their dog breaks down between them and their dog. So I think It's got lots and lots of aspects to why we don't want to do it. Ethics is a real strong one, but it's also what that can do to your dog and do to the relationship that you have with your dog at that time, and the damage that can inflict on their confidence, on their trust on you as well. So I think all of that can make a huge impact. And I think that if we can raise more awareness of the seriousness of it, it's not just about getting the results. And I think that it stems from this kind of get the results now, and we have that instant impact where we see, okay, well, I did this and that worked. If we understand that what that does to the dog, and over time what that will do, and the damage that it will do, that's a price that we have to pay, and it's not worth it at all, not by any stretch.
No. And I think to me, one of the things that has become clear that is that if you deal with just the outside of the dog, you know, just the behaviour, just what they're doing, the harsh aversive methods seem effective because the dog stopped doing it. But if you know about the inside of the dog, and let me say, I don't, but I talk to clever people like you who have looked into it and, you know, and who assure me this is what's going on in the inside of the dog. That, you know, I believe you absolutely. And it's the cost, the hidden cost to the dog of these harsh methods, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it can look tempting. I mean, I can look at the methods that are being used and the results. I mean, the methods have never tempted me exactly. But when you see the results and you see that the dog is doing exactly what it's told, and yeah, I can see how that can look impressive and how it can look like, okay, this is a happy dog. For someone that doesn't have that trained eye, that can really look like the dog's complying. They wouldn't comply if they weren't happy. And so we get misled into thinking, well, it's not harming the dog because the dog can easily have a choice to say no. But when we see how manipulative that method is, that it actually takes away the choice, even if the dog looks like, okay, they can walk away at any time, their emotions won't allow them to, because now they're in a relationship with someone where they're actually fearful of what might happen if they do choose not to do it. So it can look on the surface to be quite impressive and very tempting, but when we understand what's going on underneath, we start to really see that it's not impressive, and actually it's something that I wouldn't want to have with my dog.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've touched on something there that, you know, our dogs aren't wild animals. You know, we haven't brought a wild animal into the house. They have instincts, you know, yeah. But we've bred them for years, you know, centuries to cooperate with us, to love us, to want to cooperate. You know, somebody said to me, your positive methods won't work until the dog respects you. And I was like, what? I'm pretty sure the dog already, you know, if you want to say respects, whatever, you know, they're not doing this behavior. You know, our issue with Diamond is when we try and put the harness on, or when she's thwarted, kind of thing. So it's more than just puppy nipping. It is actually when she's frustrated and thwarted, or when she doesn't want that harness on. And we have worked and worked and worked to pair the harness with positive behaviours, and it all touches with positive, you know, with treats. And so we've really backed off and worked on that, and we are seeing progress. But it is slow. It is frustrating, you know, and you can't force it, because every time you force it, it's a backward step. So it's really, really difficult.
Yeah.
But you just have to go slowly and let her be comfortable with it. And there is no quick fix. So, but that kind of, I know that she's not doing it because she doesn't respect me, in inverted commas. She's doing it because she's frightened, basically. And so if I do these horrible things to her, that's just going to make her more frightened, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing, like when it comes to respect and, you know, getting our dogs to respect us, I think that when we flip that around and we think, when the people that say this and the people that think this, do they respect their dog? And you know, that's something that I see quite often. It doesn't look like there's any respect for the dog for just being a dog. And that's where I see that it's not really a fair comparison, because when we expect, and how can we expect a dog to just respect us if we're not sharing that respect back to them, or respecting their species, that, you know, the traits that make them a dog and their breed traits and the fact that they're, you know, individual beings with their own emotions and their own likes and dislikes. So I think that, you know, if we wanted to go with the flow of, okay, well, we get the dog to respect us, it doesn't have to be a forceful encounter. It doesn't have to be, you know, respect is a two-way thing. You know, it doesn't have to be a dominance-led thing. It doesn't have to be something that is built upon me being a leader and me being the dominant one. But respect is just a mutual thing that we build together through trust. And trust is something where we're kind of respectful of each other's space. We're respectful of each other's needs and wants and desires and what they need in that moment. So I think respect's an interesting thing that's been a word that's been misused. I prefer, you know, building trust. Does your dog trust you? Do you trust, you know, how far do you trust your dog? I mean, because we get to know our dogs and we get to know what they, what their personality is and what they can, you know, handle and what they don't like. So I think that's an interesting one. And building things upon fear. If we've got a dog that's fearful, adding more fear to the mix is definitely just going to end in catastrophe. So, you know, although immediately they might do it and they might stop the behavior momentarily, it's going to end up with suppression, and that's going to overflow at some point into a huge, you know, it's like a ticking time bomb, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've used this analogy before, but for example, I am very, very frightened. It's not a phobia, but I'm very, very frightened of wasps and bees. And I do all the wrong things. I run around and I flap my arms and I panic and I do all that. Now, if for example, you hit me, you know, and you punched me hard and said, pack it in, stand still, sit down, you know, which you would never do, Bethany. I know that. But if you did, if you hit me hard enough, yeah, I'd probably go, ooh, I didn't like that. Yeah, I'll sit. I don't want her to hit me again. I'll sit still. However, even if it looked like, oh, I've stopped that behavior and I'm sitting still and I'm being good, I would be terrified inside because now I've got the fear of the bee or the wasp and I've got the fear of you. And the other thing that I think would happen is over time, if you threaten me repeatedly, at some point that bee or wasp is going to come close enough to me to make me freak out and think, well, I'm going to hit you back and I'm going to run it. Do you know what I mean? As you say, we are making a problem. We're building a huge problem.
Absolutely. And I think something that, you know, the people that kind of teach this, they often miss the signs of emotional shutdown where the dog just opts out. And it looks like at the time that the dog has made a decision and learned, okay, I'll stop doing this behavior. Now, whether that behavior is led by fear or whether that behavior is led by an unmet need. And, you know, it doesn't really matter because it's the same kind of, you know, we're just going to run with it with something that if we are going to apply that kind of same analogy and I'm going to stop the behavior by teaching my dog to fear me or fear the consequence, whether they have fear already or they actually just had a desire. And what all that's going to do is put them into emotional shutdown. So it looks like, and it can look like, if you're not trained to spot the differences, it does look like the dog is just calm and they're like, oh, okay, I'll just stop doing that. But when we're looking for the signs and we can see that the dog is, you know, their ears have just gone slightly back or the muscles have gone tight and they've just kind of shut down, they've gone small, they're not looking really relaxed. Like you can see the difference between a dog when they're relaxing, they're really like open and floppy and relaxing. Whereas a dog that's just stopped in emotional shutdown will just go right down, make themselves quite small. They'll have that kind of anxious look in their eye. You know, you might see whale eye, they might dart their eyes about. And to an untrained eye, that might look like, okay, well, the dog's behaving themselves now. But what's actually happening is that suppression. They're going into an emotional shutdown, they're opting out, and they're not learning anything positive from that experience. If anything, they're learning very, very negative things. They're not able to express their emotions. Therefore, they're not able to work through their emotions and learn how to retain their emotions in the future for when they need to. So it actually does a lot more damage than it actually looks like at that time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, thinking about it, we had one dog that was reactive and he would freeze. Well, he was, to me, initially, I thought, oh, he's being good. He's standing still for the other dog. This is a surprise because he's normally reactive. And then when it was pointed out to me, actually, he's freezing. And it was really difficult to spot from behind him holding the lead. I'm just thinking, oh, he's being good. He's standing still. He was actually going, I can't stand, just like I can do with a bee or wasp. You know, I can go, I'm standing, I'm staying still, but take it away, get away from me. You know, and he was doing that and I was missing it completely. And he's going, I'm being good. I'm standing still. Take this dog away or move me away. And I missed it until it was pointed out to me. And I think this is why, well, it's one of the reasons we need to consult qualified, experienced behaviourists who do deal with the inside of the dog, not just the outside, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, because, well, we work from the dog within. So we start with all the things that make them tick, you know, what's their personality? I mean, I always start with their personality because there are going to be things that I could suggest that are either going to complement their personality traits or they're going to rub up against them in the wrong way. And we need to know which one's which. We need to know what's going to benefit that particular dog and working with the dog in front of us. And that's why, you know, I have come away from, you know, a lot of the even traditional training in terms of teaching dogs to sit and lie down, everything has to have a purpose. And so I question, you know, what are we doing with the dog? Why do we need them to sit? Why do we need them to lie down? Do we? And actually quite often we don't. But what can we do instead that's going to benefit this dog? So if we have a dog that doesn't like staying still very much, you know, what can we do that can focus them? I don't think sitting and lying down is going to complement them. So what can we do instead that's actually going to make them feel good and actually activate the intellectual part of their brain? Because, you know, quite often we're just working with the emotional brain and the instinctual brain, but we're quite often bypassing the intellectual part of the brain and helping dogs to think for themselves and think through what's going on, what's happening, and giving them choices as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's quite a shocking concept when you first encounter it. Well, when you first realise, you know, I can remember watching Buddy standing a toy up on a sandpit and thinking, he's got a little mind of his own and he's thinking and I don't know what on earth he's doing, but he's doing something and he's doing it very deliberately. And he's, you know, you get a little bit, oh, why isn't this happening? But you know, when you say an intellectual aspect of dogs, I think a lot of people will go, what? It's quite, you know, it's like dogs have an intellectual aspect, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a part of what, you know, we've been trained to believe in a lot of ways, that they're like basic beings and that they can only follow cues and instructions. But we now know, and science has showed us this as well with the studies that are coming out, we're getting much better studies these days. So it backs up everything when we actually realise how intelligent dogs are and how much thought they can put into something and how much they can actually understand. And we know that they do have a prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking part of the brain. So we know that they can use that. And it's just a case of teaching them and encouraging them how to, through guidance and gentle guidance, but actually encouraging them to think through problems and, you know, and with our guidance. And it's kind of like, I always use the analogy of teaching a young child to ride a bike. So you'll start with the stabilizers and you'll start being right there, you know, ready to catch them when they fall. And that's the guidance that we provide at first. And then when you can see that they're capable of riding on their own, you start to take a step back and you allow them to make those choices. But you're still, you know, on guard, ready to catch them and rush up to them if they need our help. But as they start to learn and are more capable they become, we become more confident knowing that they are able and they're confident and capable enough. And that's like my analogy of how we guide and teach dogs to use their own brain to actually think through things. And that's part of what I do with you know, my method. So I use this so that we're actually teaching dogs to become more independent in their thoughts and their choices.
Yeah, yeah. So it isn't about kind of, because this is another attitude that we sometimes encounter if you're positive. It's not about just letting the dog do exactly what they fancy doing whenever they fancy doing it, is it? It still is sort of teaching them and guiding them, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the same with children. We wouldn't want to just free reign, you know, it's a free for all. You do whatever you want, whenever you want, because that's carnage.
Yeah.
And, you know, we would end up with a very, very difficult lifestyle if we did that. But also it wouldn't be very healthy for the dog. So dogs need those boundaries and they do need that guidance and they do need boundaries of how to employ impulse control and self-restraint and how to actually use those, you know, rather than just you know, letting them do whatever they want, whenever they want, because that wouldn't be safe for a start. But also, it's not healthy for their mind. It's not healthy for our relationship. It's definitely not going to be healthy for society either. So, yeah, definitely we want those, but it's safe. Boundaries. We don't employ that, you know, boundaries and strict rules for the sake of it. We actually, you know, use our initiative and go, okay, well, no harm's going to come from allowing our dogs some free choice here. So we can allow that, we can encourage that. But, you know, if we're on the side of a road, then obviously we can't give them free rein. We need to make sure that we've got that guidance and boundaries in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, I mean, I know children and dogs are over compared to each other. I know that. But, you know, we manage to do it with our children. We don't resort to, well, I've got to put a shock collar on the child then because the child won't do it. You know, we don't do that. We teach them. We keep on and on and on teaching and rewarding and, you know, and we don't batter them. We just teach them and we reach that stage of understanding. It's maybe harder with a dog because you've got the language barrier, but, you know, I do think it's a valid comparison because, you know, is it like you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like a young child mentality, isn't it? Kind of the dog's attitude.
Yeah, I mean, so the comparison to children and dogs, I think actually there's a lot of overlap that we had missed before or we hadn't really looked at before. So I think that using it as a comparison is fine. Obviously, we need to be aware of the species differences.
Yes, yeah.
And as long as we're not silly about it, then that's fine. I think that it works. And I think that, you know, the fear of anthropomorphizing dogs, you know, we're coming away from that now because we're seeing that there's an awful lot of benefit from doing that within reason.
Yeah.
Obviously we do it for, you know, we're not going to use it as an excuse to punish our dogs or, you know, put negative connotations on it. But in terms of, you know, the age, it's a different one because it had been understood up until recently that dogs could only understand as much as a toddler. And now the more research is coming out and we're starting to realise that it might be more, you know, somewhere between a 4 and 6 year old child in terms of what they can understand in our language.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, we did think there was a big language barrier. But if we actually teach using language, you'll start to see that your dogs do understand words and they do understand it. They can actually understand what we mean behind the words as well, if we teach it properly. And there's been a study on this as well, where they actually showed what parts of the dog's brain was working in terms of language understanding. And the results were really, really surprising. That really does show that dogs understand a lot more than we think. And we can use that to their advantage as well as our own advantage. You know, if we're, you know, using words in a kind way, and we use it in a state of guidance and very similar to how we would teach language to, you know, young children. I think that that's something that we can help to teach dogs rather than telling them what to do all the time and kind of robotically training them. I think that makes it a really big difference.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, they are the thing that I find it can be useful and it can be challenging is that dogs are always learning. They're always listening. They're always watching,
yeah.
You know, and they learn. And sometimes you think, how did you know I was going to do whatever it was? Because they've seen you do it. You know, yeah. You say, oh, right. One of my things is I go, right. And I put my hands on the arm of the chair and I get up. And the dog's like at the door before. I'm like, how do you, because it's been repeated and repeated and there's something in it for them because sometimes we go outside. Sometimes it's a walk. Sometimes, you know, there's usually something good going on. And I think that's such a lesson, isn't it, that they are always learning and taking in what's going on. So just a quick question, if we aim to be, you know, positive and work with the dog in front of us and give them choices, can we still do sort of activities with them? Now obviously we're going to match the activity to what the dog, you know, shows enjoyment of, or, you know, but can we still do, or which activities can we still do with them?
I think you can do any activities with your dog. I think it depends on what your dog enjoys. You know, I've seen, you know, really good practice of, you know, agility dogs and sports dogs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think that that's absolutely fine as long as your dog is actually enjoying it and has choice of breaks. And it's not just all about us winning awards, you know, because that's a feel good for us. I think there's nothing wrong with winning awards, you know, as long as you're participating with your dog and you're working as a team. team. And it's not just my dog will do what I say because I want them to do this, and recognizing when our dogs have had enough, when they're not enjoying it anymore, and also respecting our dogs enough to then make that sacrifice if we do realize that our dog isn't enjoying it, and yet we are. That's a very difficult thing to you know, be in. It's a difficult situation to be in, and I think that the respectful thing to do then, if we realize that our dog is saying this isn't my type of environment, I'm not really interested, is to actually stop putting our dog in that situation. So I think that it does depend on the individual dog, and it's about learning how to recognize them as an individual and what they're saying to us, and if they're actually benefiting from this activity or not. So it very much depends. I mean, I look at natural enrichment rather than enforced enrichment and see what the dog enjoys. And like, I've got two spaniels. One absolutely loves to swim. Mm. And that's like the best thing in the world, swimming and digging. And the other one, not interested. He's like, I'll occasionally have a swim, but I don't want to be in for very long. So, you know, I love going swimming when I take my dogs to the beach, and I've accepted that, you know, my dog Dave, he'll come for a swim with me, and Steve will stay with my husband, and he won't necessarily come in. So I can't do it on my own because I wouldn't want to leave my dog stranded on the beach or force him to make a decision to come into the sea with me. So, you know, it's making those kind of compromises that respect each dog.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it, really, really tough, because you, as humans, we have an expectation often when we get a dog that I want to do XYZ with them, or I want them to be XYZ. And it is really upsetting sometimes to think, well, I can't do that. Or I can't do that without compromising the dog's experience, you know, and then we're going to have to find a different activity. I mean, I had a Labrador that just did not like water. He would go in up to about his elbows and then he'd start going, I don't like this. And he'd get out, and that just wasn't a problem, you know, but it can be very emotionally challenging to the human part of the lead, can't it?
Definitely. And especially if you've set up an idea and you've built a picture of what it's going to be like with you and your dog, even before you've got your dog, that can be a really hard picture to change when the reality hits and we realize that this isn't the dog that I dreamt of. And I think that quite often when we let go of that picture that we built before, and we build a new picture, a picture that involves our dog's uniqueness and their preferences, that picture is quite often even better than the one we thought we were building before. And that's something that I can speak from personally. I built a picture up of what it was going to be like with all my dogs, and, you know, what kind of lifestyle I was going to have. And it didn't work out like that at all. It was very different. You know, I ended up rescuing a dog with quite a few behavior issues. And, you know, back then I was just starting my behavior journey. So it was a learning curve for me, and learning that you can't just train behavior away, because that was a previous misconception that I held. And I really thought, well, it's okay. I've been a trainer for a few years now. I can deal with anything. And of course I couldn't. And you can't train behavior away. So you need to learn about the dog's preferences, what state of mind they're in. And you need to really incorporate that into your day-to-day basis. And I prefer my life now with my dogs to the life that I would have pictured. And that did take a little while, but it's actually much more fulfilling to have this reality and this closeness that I have with my dogs than the reality of what I, you know, or the non-reality that I was working up in my head of what my life would be like with my dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. This is saying, I think it's to do with showing, but that you've got to love the dream more than the dog to sort of succeed in the showing world. And I always think, I tried a little bit of showing with Buddy, and I really realized that I loved the dog much more than the dream. The dream I had then was just to get to Crufts one way or another, just to be at Crufts with Buddy, and we did do it. But I did learn that I did love the dog more than the dream, and it was quite nice when it all finished and we could relax and just be owner and pet again, or human and dog again. And I think to be a pet dog is to be the best thing in the world. Because that's the real, to me, that's the real purpose of the dog. Just, you know, I'm not denigrating working dogs. I think, you know, guide dogs and hearing dogs and, you know, assistance dogs are brilliant. I'm not denigrating that at all. But I suppose what I mean is that relationship between us is at the heart of, to me, it's at the heart of what we want with our, with yep. all our dogs.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have seen, you know, it can work where if you do happen to get a dog that wants to work and they want to, you know, go into the show rings, and some dogs love it because they want the attention and they love, you know, being made a big fuss of by everyone. And they love to work with their, you know, with their parent, you know, so it's more about, the relationship is if you've built the relationship up with your dog rather than you, I call it like a transactional relationship or a relationship built from fear, rather than that relationship, you're building it up from just a natural relationship of trust and respect and safety between both of your dog. And your dog does still want to do these things and they do show that desire. I actually think that's a wonderful thing, but it's not for everyone and it's not for every dog. And I think if we can take that kind of pressure that my dog must do this or I must be like this to get my dog to do this, we can start to see what kind of dog we do have and see them for who they actually are. And then we build up the activities and our lifestyle, you know, centering that dog. And I think that is a beautiful, beautiful thing, because I think when you take away all the rest of it, which I think is like the superficial stuff, you get to the real crux of it and you really see something else that is worth so much more than any medal can ever give you, because that is a unique relationship that you'll never get again with a different dog. They're all so unique, and that to me is so precious that I think that it's worth sacrificing any other dog dream that you may have had before.
Yeah. And it can be really tough. It's an emotional journey for you, yeah. isn't it? Definitely. Yeah. But then you are really entering into a relationship with the dog, aren't you? Not just owning them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's so much to this subject. Thank you so much. I've got one eye on the time, as ever. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Fairly quickly, anything else you'd like to say?
I mean, I would like to encourage anyone that is on the fence, that is thinking, you know, maybe they are either a professional and they're a trainer and they're kind of more a balanced trainer or using harsh methods or a balance of the two, or an owner that is like, I've been advised that this is the way forward, that I need to put an electric shock collar on my dog or a slip lead or something like that, but my gut instinct is telling me that this isn't right. You know, quite often, and I speak to so many dog parents in my career that have had this, the same experience where they're like, I just knew it wasn't right, but that person, they're a professional and they knew more than me. And so who am I to question them? I just encourage you to go with your gut. You know, so this is an unregulated industry and sometimes you may know more. You know, sometimes you may have been influenced by another professional, you know, somewhere on social media or on the radio or something like that, where you kind of heard that it's not right and it's not the best way. And I think that it's just taking that courage in yourself and the self-belief to know that you can say, this isn't for me. I'm going to seek, you know, a force-free trainer or a force-free behaviourist, someone that isn't going to suggest these things. And just to be careful, because some balanced trainers do use the term positive reinforcement and they do use the term force-free. So really understand who they are, research the behaviourist or the trainer before you commit to them, because you want to know and ask them, if my dog isn't going to comply with what we're doing, what would the result of that be? What would you do? And really ask and find out if they would use any of these aversives, because I think being transparent and clear is the best thing, and having the confidence and definitely looking at, you know, qualified behaviourists and qualified trainers. You know, there's lots of accredited ones. So look at the accreditation list, because you'll see that there are some that you will know that are going to not put you in that situation.
Yeah, excellent advice. Excellent. Thank you ever so much. Where can people find out more about you online?
So I run, I'm actually the owner of the CDD method. So I've got a website called Canine Dialogue Dynamics, and I've got loads of stuff there. I've got some free Facebook groups as well. I specialise in reactivity. So I have got a Facebook group called Redefining Reactivity. I also have some books as well. So I've got Barking Up a New Tree and Redefining Reactivity. They're both available on Amazon. And the type of work I do is more holistic, is taking a step away from training, is looking at the psychology of dogs and looking at natural learning and teaching through language without so much conditioning and so much desensitization. So it is a different way of working with dogs, but it's very force-free. It's very holistic.
Yeah, yeah. We need to get together another time and
we do.
Go into your method even more, because that sounds brilliant, brilliant. Thank you ever so much. And I suppose Merry Christmas, we should say.
Yes, yes. It's soon approaching. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much to Bethany Bell for that endorsement of being positive and kind with our dogs. We have the links that Bethany mentioned at dogcastradio.com. And I do recommend you investigate Bethany further, because I've found her a great support as I've struggled to stay positive.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Now we have dog life hacks from Jennifer Billett of Bone Ball Bark for you. These are fantastic ideas which will make life for your dog happier, easier, and more fun.
Today I'm talking to Jennifer Billett from Bone Ball Bark. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Gilly. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, it's not too bad, thank you. Good, just warming good. Up.
Yes, I'm chilly. I'm cold. We've got snow at the moment on the floor, but that's okay. That's all right. We're going to warm everyone's hearts now with what I was thinking we could call dog life hacks. I think, perfect. Definitely. Hashtag dog perfect. Life hacks.
So, I like that.
Okay, but first of all, catch us up with your beautiful dog, because the last time we talked, I can't remember how long, I mean, I can't believe how long it was ago now, because you'd only just got him and you were getting lots of toys for him and setting him up for success with being quiet while you were on the phone with me. So catch us up with Griffin. He's beautiful.
So he's now 4 years old. He just turned four a couple of weeks ago. It goes by so fast. Yeah. You can't really believe it. I think we get really bogged down in puppyhood. You know, you kind of want them to get to adulthood because it can be so much easier. But actually, before you know it, he sort of acts like an old man now. there's no more trying to keep him occupied at my feet. I think he's downstairs on the couch, just snoozing, really.
Just chilling. Yeah. Oh, brilliant. You're right, though, because, I mean, I'm in the middle of Diamond's 8 months, and you're like, oh, please, please grow up. You can't be a puppy all the time, you know, all your life. You can't be this hard. And you know, when that comes, I know I will kind of miss some of the puppy behaviours. Not all, but some, you know. Yeah.
No, absolutely. But no, he's okay. We've had a bit of a, no, I don't want to say challenging year, because that sounds bad, but we did so well the first sort of 3 years of his life health-wise. Yeah. And then sort of from January this year, we've had sort of, we do physio for stiff hips and things. And he injured himself in May. He ran into a wall, because why would you stop when a wall comes? Especially with a Labrador. Yeah. He snapped some of his nails, but actually what we think it's triggered is an autoimmune disease that's attacking his nails. It's very rare, of course it's rare.
Yeah.
And it just means that his body is kind of disintegrating his nails, which can be quite painful.
Yeah.
But we've got a wonderful vet and we're managing it at this point. But we've just been turning to each other not so long ago and just been like, oh gosh, it's been great. You know, all of these other dogs you hear about who have all of these sort of issues, oh, they're in the vets again. And I'm like, wow, we haven't been to the vets in ages. And then it's...
Yeah.
One thing, we had an amputated dew claw a couple of months ago because of it all and things. Oh, wow. So it's...
Yeah.
But apart from that, he's as beautiful... Oh, he's the love of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Dog. He's gorgeous. Black Labradors, you can't beat them. Can't beat them.
No, agreed.
Yeah.
Not that either of us are biased in any way.
I think I do, deep in my heart, there is, because Buddy was my first dog and Black Labrador, you know, I'll never see a Black Labrador without going, oh, and it's a very, you know, it's deep-rooted response. So, yeah, I think, but they're such... forgiving dogs, and they're willing to work with you, and I don't know, they're just
absolutely
wonderful. yeah
absolutely.
But we better move on, because not everybody's got a Black Labrador. Yeah. So we better include everybody.
True
So all dogs, not just Black Labradors today. There's a lot to fit in. I know we want to fit a lot in today, but let's start with our first dog life hack. It's a post about, because we all lead busy lives and we've got a lot to fit in. And I'm too busy to do dog training, you know, and that's a genuine thing. And, you know, I can't commit to a great big class every, you know, even once a week. I can't do it. I never know when I'm going to be free. Yeah. So what's the answer? If we can't commit to, you know, a class or whatever, and we haven't got a lot of time, what can we do?
I sort of advise my clients a few different things. It depends on the client. It depends on the person's personality. So for some of them, I say find the moments throughout the days where you're waiting around. And that's usually waiting for coffee to be made, or you've put something in the microwave, or delivery is coming and it's, you know, how you can see the little man and it's 5 minutes away. You know, those would be your ideal moments, because we don't need to be training our dogs for hours at a time. I think people think that we, you know, you need to set aside big chunks of time. But in reality, for sort of everyday training, fitting in a few minutes multiple times a day is very beneficial and more achievable for the majority of dog owners, I think. So I sort of say first hack is, spend a few days, see where you're waiting around, and then that's the moment to fit it in. And a couple of clients do really well with, you know, pill boxes for humans, where it has, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah. If you put 10 treats in each of those, but put them sort of where they're accessible, and all you have to do on the Monday is make sure that those 10 treats have gone and you've used them for training.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea.
And that's just... it's just easy. And I think by the time someone thinks, oh, I should have trained the dog today, or where are my treats, or how many should I use, something like that, it's better that they're already set up, ready for it. And that's the best way of doing it, really.
Yeah, yeah. That's brilliant. And you could keep that on the kitchen surface, couldn't you? And sort of, as you say, when you...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, cooking or waiting for the microwave, waiting for the kettle, whatever. Just do some training. That's brilliant. So easy. So easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Very easy. You've got to make it easy for the humans. Otherwise, it's just not going to get done.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right in that it probably does the dogs more good to keep it a short and sweet session and sort of leave them wanting more. And then you come to it, you both come to it sort of fresh. Because sometimes you think, oh, I'll take the night in the garden, I'll do half an hour. And I'm sure way before the end, the dog's like, oh, I want to just go and have a sniff, or I want to do something. Whereas if you can keep them, you know, just a few goes and it stays fresh and they want to do more then.
And it's consistency as well. We want to be training a little bit every day if possible, and as opposed to doing, it's sort of like if we went to the gym, if we only managed to go to the gym for a really hard workout once a week, that's still very beneficial, but not as beneficial as can you fit in four gym sessions throughout the week, but they might be shorter. So it's about being able to do it consistently as opposed to, well, I haven't done any in 5 days. Let's do an hour.
Yeah.
It's not as effective.
No, absolutely. And I'm sure, I bet the dogs tend to sort of start hanging around at those times when you've put the microwave on, or, you know, and they're like, oh, right, it's training time, because they like it, don't they? I mean, they actually enjoy a bit of, you know, brain work and having fun with you.
Yeah, especially if you know that they get kind of annoying in certain times. Is there a way of fitting it in then? For example, when you're making dinner, or... I don't know, first thing in the morning when you haven't had your coffee, can you fit in those moments while the coffee's being made, and they're sort of, oh, are we going out for a walk yet, or whatever it might be? Those are the moments.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to benefit you and the dog, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, I like that. It's so easy. And you say it's not like taking, it's useless time. It's wasted time, isn't it? You're just hanging around waiting. So
yeah.
Make it useful. Definitely. Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. And if you're chopping up food, if you're chopping up vegetables or whatever, if it's suitable for the dog, you can always use a bit of that as a treat as well, couldn't you?
Oh yes. I mean, Griff. That's when we do a lot of our training, to be honest, because he eats a lot of cucumbers and carrots and green beans and things. That's when we do a lot of our training as well. Yeah. I'm cutting those up because it takes me a while, and otherwise he's just standing there drooling, or
Oh, excellent. So that's industrious, and we're getting a lot of work done, and we're getting some training done and activity. Now,
yeah,
I love the idea. You did a post about rest days. Now, rest days, it's not that they're doing nothing on those days, is it? It's just that we're looking at things differently. So this is quite I think some people can be quite resistant to rest days. It's like you've got to get them out and you've got to do your 45 minutes of trekking around the park every day. So what is a rest day?
A rest day gives the dog an opportunity to sort of relax physically, relax mentally, relax emotionally. We tend to rest ourselves. If we talk about sort of self-care and things like that, we're good at resting ourselves. But when we usually think of our dogs in almost these 24-hour blocks, it's sort of they wake up the next day and they're back to sort of fresh out the packet, so to speak.
Yeah, reboot, reset.
yeah. Which is, that's not the case. We know there's so much sort of scientific study gone into all of this in terms of, we know that if a dog has had a very stressful experience, especially fireworks night that's just been, for example, cortisol can build up in their body and stay in their body for sort of 3 days. And so they haven't rebooted overnight.
Yeah.
And things like physically as well. Going back to a gym analogy, just because it's the first one on the top of my head, if you sort of do a hard workout every single day, it doesn't give your muscles chance to recover. And same with our dogs. We don't often do a very sort of good job of warming our dogs up before exercise or cooling them down. And then we sort of ask them to do high intensity every day. For example, chasing a ball every day in the park or play dates or, you know, whatever it might be. So rest days are the opportunity for a dog just to sort of come back to a bit more centered, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I like this. There seems to be a movement in dog training, if you like, but dog living with the dog, just dog life again.
Right.
You know, this idea that we're finally realizing, actually, standing there with a dog flinger, you know, the ball flinger, and just flinging the ball, it's not actually great for the dog, because they actually come back really hyped up. And that's a real shock, because, you know, we had a border collie and I had a ball flinger.
Yeah.
Luckily, I'd come across that idea. And so we did shake it up and do different things. So we chased the ball.
Great. Or
sometimes, you know, sit down there, wait and throw the ball and that kind of thing. But it is important that they need more than just being hyped up, don't they?
And that, for sure, especially the kind of the adrenaline that's used for those types of repetitive ball chasing exercises, but also think of the impact on their joints. These sort of like very quick, fast sprints, skidding to a stop. A lot of dogs will then, you know, tumble over, grab the ball, run back, repeat. That's an incredible amount of pressure, and a lot of damage is done often with that type of exercise. So yeah, I'm not a huge fan of ball launches.
No. Well, also, I mean, you're stirring up and harnessing all those predatory instincts, but you're not actually sort of letting them run their natural course. So it's a bit like taking one of us shopping and going, right, go and find the perfect jeans. And you find the perfect jeans and then I take them off you and go, right, go and find them again. Go and find a different. And it's just like you never get to put, you know, buy the jeans and take them home and wear them. And do you know what I mean? You never do the full sequence that you want to. So it's, you'd get home and you go, but I found them several times. I never got to keep them. And do you know, it's, I always try and put it in human terms. Yeah. But so it's.
Yes. Sequence is a very good word for it, because a lot of times we think that the majority of dogs and dog breeds, they want the chase, right? They want to throw the ball. As soon as they get it, we're beckoning them back, asking for them to, you know, release it so that we can do it again. Whereas a lot of dog breeds have been bred to, yes, chase after stuff, but then capture it, fling it around, dissect it, take it away. You know, all of these things that are actually breed specific behaviors for these types of dogs, they don't get to partake in, which can be very frustrating. So we've kind of just really cottoned on to this fetch term, and that the majority of dogs just want to be sprinting for it and they're like, oh yeah, do it again. Or, you know, it's the same way as like, I have people who say like, oh, I throw the ball and he runs after it, but then he doesn't pick it up. And I'm like, well, he's a corgi, you know, like they weren't bred to retrieve.
No.
It's a style.
It always amazes me how much fun the dog has. You know, when you lose the ball, they either weren't looking where you threw it or it's rolled down somewhere. And they are so happy sniffing out and finding this ball. It's annoying to you because you've lost the ball. But to them, it's great, isn't it? They love it.
It's seeking. It's using scent work. It's turning on a lot of other parts of their brain that is not used in sort of traditional fetch.
Yeah. I that really astonished me the first time I noticed that they actually, you know, I'd be like, oh, blimey, the ball's rolled down here and we've got to, oh, how annoying. And the dog's tail was wagging. And I'm like, Oh, okay. Right. I can use that. So, yeah. So on a rest day, what kind of activities can people be doing?
It massively depends on your dog, their age, their ability, what's restful but also enriching for them. For Griff, it's usually something new to chew. He'll sit there and really gnaw on a beef shin bone or something like that, or it's something usually sniffing. Our favorite one at the moment, we kind of go, you know, you sort of do one game for a while and then it drops off for a year and then you come back to it. Ours is the I have a holy roller, and I've got strips of cut up pillowcases, and I roll treats inside the pillowcase strips and stuff it in the holy roller. And that sort of means that he can do a lot of those sequences, right? In terms of he's using scent work, sniffing it out. He's got to grab the ball. He's pulling the strips out and then unraveling them, finding them as they flinged around the room.
Yeah.
Flinged? Flung. Flung around the room.
Flung.
flung. There you go. So we do sort of some of that. He's now 4, so rest days are a lot easier. I say that he kind of takes to a rest day a lot easier now. We do one a week. I had to work a little bit harder on enrichment when he was younger, but for now, that sort of keeps him pretty occupied. He's okay with that. We do a 5-10 minute spin around the block a couple of times a day so that he can go to the toilet, but we're not running, chasing, off leash, you know, none of that.
Yeah. I think it's a great idea. Like you say, there's days when you wake up, you go, oh, I can't do my steps today, or I can't do whatever it is, you know, and I just need the day. And, you know, probably our dogs are have the same, you know, feelings. And maybe be prepared to do a rest day. And maybe when your dog seems to be resistant to going out, our Bichon Frise often would go, I don't fancy it today. You know, you could just see she was like, no, I don't. So maybe take the lead from the dog. What does the, you know, is the dog telling you they want to go?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, yeah, perfect. Especially for there's a lot of breeds that don't appreciate the, I mean, I don't have one, but a lot of breeds don't appreciate the wet, right? And so a lot of people feel like they're forcing their dog out in the rain. And yes, okay, sometimes we do need to physically exercise our dogs, that's for sure. But there are times where it's like, okay, well, we'll be at home. That's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Another post of yours, an idea that I thought was brilliant, was to teach the go around. and that's so versatile. So first of all, what behaviour are we talking about here with the go around?
So when I say that to Griff, what I'm expecting is the thing that I'm indicating at is something I want him to go run around the back of it. So I think in the post that I did, it was a goal post in a park.
Yeah.
But we often do it around benches, bins, trees is a big one, and it's a really great cue because your dog is physically working, obviously they're running, but it's also working on recall and focus on you, because the idea being is that you send them away, you give your mark as they've gone round, and they sprint back to you for some sort of reward, and it can just really build focus and that recall. We love it. It's a great one in our household for sure.
And I love it because it's easy to fall into the mentality of, we're out on a walk, I'm going to look at my phone, you're going to just mooch about, you know, and we're not going to connect very much. And it's a wasted opportunity, isn't it, really? Because walks are quality time, or they should be quality time with your dog, shouldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just makes things fun. Not every cue has to be functional or obedience based. It's not a heel, it's not a, you know, all of these things have places in our lives with our dogs, so that's for sure. But in terms of adding in some fun cues, usually takes the stress away from the guardian when they're trying to teach them anyway, because it's something fun, so they're not sort of thinking, oh, I have to have my dog walk to heel at all times, and gets a bit stressful. These are just fun cues that can really add novelty and stimulation on a walk for your dog. And it feels pretty cool. You know, my partner loves this one because I think he feels pretty cool where he can tell Griff to go run around something and he comes, you know, he hairs off and runs around a tree and comes back. You know, it's a cool feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, I mean, it is, you're right. I was just thinking that Buddy and I on walks, he what we used to like doing together was we'd weave. So he'd be going through my legs, you know, left and right, left and right. And then he'd do spin on the right-hand side. That was clockwise round. And then... twist on the left-hand side. That's anti-clockwise, right? And then we could do like weave and spin and weave and twist and whatever. And it was just such a good fun activity that we both enjoyed doing these heel work to music moves, you know, in the middle of a field, and hopefully nobody was watching, but it was just fun. And you felt like, wow. I mean, it was okay, but you know what I mean? You feel like the best trainer in the world. Look at my dog. And, you know, and we're just having fun here. And the dog's having fun. And it's just, it's really, really good. It leaves you and the dog feeling good. And you're a team together. It's just good, isn't it?
Yep. Well, and also, it's, when we talk about, you know, the biggest problem I think the majority of owners have in parks is recall, right? Yes. They want their dog to come back to them. And often the rewards that we have at our disposal aren't particularly rewarding for a dog, or some people say, oh, he doesn't like treats, or, you know, whatever it is. And often if we can utilize movement to add to the reinforcement of coming back to you, if Griff is off playing with another dog and I recall him and I give him a single treat, even if it's a good quality treat, you can tell he's like, cool, I kind of was having more fun, but sure. Yes. whereas if you call him back and there's some form of movement and action, you can use his body, like a hug toy is a good one, doing a go around is a good one, doing weaving, you know, something that's more stimulating and exciting for them, you can actually get much better responses to recall cues, as opposed to Griff come, here's the treat, now the leash is going on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And they do pick up on your attitude as well, I find, that if you're... early on with Buddy, I realised that, you know, your basic obedience, he was a bit like, oh, because I was a bit like, oh. And when we got the alley-oop out, or the targeting, it was like, whoa, we're going to do fun now. And it was like, wow, yeah. I am showing him, this is boring, this is fun, and you've got to be really careful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's when I think obedience has a place, but it can come across as very formal.
Yeah.
And we don't live in formal... The majority of dogs and the majority of clients I go to, we're not living in a formal environment, and they're not doing obedience for any type of competition, or that can be fun as well. But the majority of times we're looking at connection, focus, and responsiveness.
Yeah.
And focusing on obedience can be almost detrimental to that.
Yeah.
So if we can add in some of these fun things that still can be functional and work in these contexts, I think you get a much better partnership anyway.
Yeah.
And much better responses to our cues anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And very much in that area, that kind of behaviour, your idea about touch, which you can use for recall or various things, touch. So explain the behaviour first. What is touch?
Touch, the way I train it, is come hit your nose to the palm of my hand, and I'm holding my flat palm out to the side of my body, quite a ways out to my out to the side of my body, so that it's a very visual cue for the dog. I love this cue. It's very versatile, but I think that it's the one that we can, as humans, we can be the most consistent with. It can be extremely reinforcing for the dog to come touch their nose to the palm of your hand, mark and reward, repeat, but it often stays like that, whereas cues like come here or leave it, we change the meaning for the dog constantly. Yeah. So come here sometimes means come directly to me and sit, sometimes it means, you know, maybe you trained it at that to begin with, but over time it means, oh, just we're turning around, follow us this way. But there's not much consistency with it, whereas touch usually stays fairly consistent, because the owner knows, the nose either hit the palm or it didn't.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it. You have a very clear criteria for what you want here, and, you know, what you want the dog to do, and then you can be consistent with the dog about, yeah, you did or you didn't, you know, and I think that's great. And also it's a very concrete thing for the dog to know, okay, I've got to go and touch your hand. As you say, I'm not going to get near you or come and sit or whatever, you know, which can change. Yeah. It's a very precise thing. How would you go about starting to teach that?
First thing I do is teach them a marker word or a clicker. So you want the dog to understand that a click equals a treat, or I use the word yes as my verbal marker. I want the verbal mark yes for the dog to understand it's a treat is coming. Then I hold the treat under my thumb against my palm. I hold it out sort of away from my body, the moment I feel the dog's nose come to investigate, I mark it and let the treat go. And I repeat that over time until I don't have to have a treat under my thumb. Dog touches his nose to the palm of my hand. I say yes or click, and then the treat appears in my other hand.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you've got quite a good solid cue because it's fairly obvious what we're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, the reward is there straight, you know, in the early days, the reward is there right there on your hand. And then later on, you just supply the, yeah, the treat or, you know, whatever the reward is quickly. Yeah. And it is actually remarkably easy to get them doing that from a very early age.
Yeah.
And you can start practicing in the house, in the garden, you know, that can be one of your things that you practice during those moments during the day, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the first things that I taught Griff as a cue. It's the most versatile, and I can use it for tons of different reasons. When he doesn't understand a leave it yet or a drop or, you know, whatever it might be, I can just always come back to this one, because if you have control of the dog's nose, you sort of have control of the rest of his body.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I guess, again, with all these things, stay positive, be patient, you know, make it fun for the dog. And one thing I've learned is stress, you know, getting stressed or getting angry or whatever, just call a halt to it, stop it at that point, come back to it later, and, you know, keep it fun for the dog, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you feel in any way frustrated, whether that's with the dog or not, whether you just come home from work and you're feeling frustrated, or you just have an argument with someone and you're frustrated, that's not the time to try to train your dog. You want to be feeling there in the room, solely focused on what you're doing, so that you can provide good feedback to the dog, because they're the learners in this equation. So always try to be as positive as possible.
yeah absolutely. And it's great fun when you've taught your dog these things to show off to your friends and go, look what my dog can do. That's quite a buzz, isn't it?
yeah it is. It can be really good. Though lots of people say to me, oh, you must have the best trained dog in the world, and I sort of respond, I have the dog that's perfect for me.
Yeah.
In terms of he doesn't do fancy tricks all the time. He doesn't, you know, but he is well trained for our life and to keep him safe and happy.
Yeah. I always say, this is quite an old fashioned saying, but I always say the rod you make for your own back is the rod that you can stand. You know, the behaviors, you know, the behaviors you tolerate in your dog kind of thing, or you encourage, are the ones that you can live with. Because, I mean, I can remember some dogs you look at and think, how can you live with them? Oh my goodness. But, you know, there's a different, you know, there's a dog for everybody that'll suit you. Some dogs are laid back, some dogs are in your face, you know, but mm-hmm. we can all find the dog, you know, that we can live with happily.
Yeah. And that's usually down to management as well, in terms of you don't have to train for every single thing. Your management is just as appropriate and has a huge place in terms of dog training and living with your dog. The simplest one is, oh, I don't want my dog to go upstairs. We keep having this fight. I keep sending him back down, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, stairgate.
Yeah. Yeah.
For now.
Absolutely.
Stairgate. Just take that stress away from both of you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I mean, and things like silly things like, okay, if they're jumping on your lap and trying to get you food, sit up to the table. Or, you know, it's just that little bit of thought sometimes can stop the conflict happening, and it just makes life easier for everybody, doesn't it?
It stops habits forming as well. That's the thing with puppies. So going back to sort of puppyhood a little bit, that's what you try to get a lot of sort of clients to understand is, yes, it can feel like you're constantly managing the behavior of your dog, especially when, around the dinner table or going up and downstairs. But if we are not spending their adolescence forming these habits to then try to train it away, so to speak, when they're a bit older, so much easier.
Yeah.
Your life will be so much easier if you manage it while you're focusing on training the other things that are needed. Separation, recall, leash work, leave it. Those are sort of the four big ones. Then we can come back to it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, if people want more of these ideas, and I'm sure they do, because you've got brilliant ideas, mm-hmm. they can find a lot on your Instagram, can't they?
Yep, I have a lot on my Instagram, which is at boneballbark. And I have some resources and videos and things on my website as well, which is boneballbark.com. I have started a TikTok, but I have to admit, I'm not great.
It is. It's difficult because all the social medias platforms want a slightly different style of thing, don't they?
You know? Yeah.
And one thing will go brilliantly on Instagram, but not so good on TikTok, or it'll go brilliantly on TikTok and not so good on Twitter or X or whatever. And I've just joined Blue Sky, and that's a really cool place at the moment.
So, oh, that's very nice. Yeah.
That's
a new one, really.
Yeah. It's a very nice environment at the moment. So hopefully it will stay nice. So yes, if people can come and find you on, we'll put all the links in the show notes. People can come and find you on social media. And that's, I really recommend they do, because I love looking at your videos and seeing what's going on and taking inspiration. And yeah, it's good. And it's kind of, anything that makes you, you're very welcome. Anything that makes you feel, I can have a go at this at least and try. And you don't have to get it perfectly. But just trying and having fun with your dog is worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. That's what it should be about. You have a dog in your life to have fun with, to bond with, to relax with, to adventure with, to the best of everyone's ability. And it should always be fun. If it's not fun, then stop.
Yeah.
And seek professional help if you need.
Absolutely. That's a really important point to, we'll finish with that, but that's a really important point to, if you need help, get it. I mean, when Diamond was very, very small, we kind of went, oh my goodness, we need help here. Or we may need help. I'm not even sure, but I'm going to consult a behaviourist to come in and say whether everything's fine or actually, you need to help, some help. So seek help, that's a really important point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always beneficial, to be honest. We can always tweak things. I consult a lot with my peers when I have something going on with Griff and I'm too close to it. He struggles in the car, as in he wants to just sing in the car. He's not panting or barking, but he is very loud and I'm too close to it. I consult my fellow peers to say, can you help me come up with a training plan?
Yeah.
Because it sort of takes the emotion out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. Because when you're in it, you just despair and you kind of, and then somebody goes, have you thought of such and such? And you go, hadn't. Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right. thank you ever so much, Jennifer. Brilliant advice as usual. Thank you very much. And love to Griffin.
Yes, thank you very much. Love to catch up with you. I can't believe it's been so long.
I know. We'll do it again much sooner this time. We won't leave it so long.
Yes. Smash. Absolutely.
Thank you. Some brilliant advice there from Jennifer. We have all the links you need to catch up with Jennifer, including boneballbark.com and Jennifer's very informative Instagram account at dogcastradio.com. If you implement any of the advice in today's podcast from Bethany Bell or Jennifer Billett, I'd love it if you could get in touch and send photos or video of you and your dog. You can find Dogcast Radio on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, and X, and it would be great to connect with you there. That's about it for this time, but rest assured, I am already hard at work on our 2025 content, and I have a feeling that for us, next year will be the year of the brain, in that we will be working hard to ensure that Diamond and Mischief are getting enough mental stimulation and fun. If you've discovered an effective, enjoyable activity that gets your dog's brain working, I'd love to hear about it. Who knows what 2025 will bring? Probably the usual mix of good and bad, pleasant surprises and unwelcome shocks. But I know at times I'll be saying, thank goodness for dogs, because the rest of the world will drive you mad. I wish you the very best for Christmas and happiness and health for the new year. Should that be a furry Christmas and a yappy new year? Until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. Which Christmas carol do dogs like best?
Bark, the herald angels sing.